BlogTalkZone.com.
Now, the Wild About Pets radio show, the place to learn something new about household pets and wild animals. Here's your host, educator and naturalist, Susan Frank.
Hello, welcome to Wild About Pets. This is the place we talk in depth to leading authors and experts about household pets or wild animals. To make your listening experience more enjoyable, I have a companion website, wildaboutpets.net, that allows you to see photographs of the animals we will be talking about on the show. To look at these pictures while you are listening, just click the purple Look While You Listen button you see on the Talk Zone homepage. People are fascinated by the really large, strange, exotic-seeming animals that live in distant lands or seas, such as elephants or gorillas or whales. We like them, I think, because of how different they are from us, or sometimes we're even more fascinated by them when they have characteristics or behaviors similar to ours. We like them when we think they're cute or really unusual. After all, most people would not describe whales as being cute, I don't think. But there is something that captures our imagination about the wild and weird creatures that share our planet. Well, there is a wild and wonderful animal that lives right here in the United States. It is the largest mammal on our land, but most people don't know much about them. Let's see if you can guess what it is. The males can reach a height of up to 6 feet tall and weigh over 2,000 pounds. It once lived in every state of the U.S., except for a few of the eastern ones, and there were so many of them, you would see them stretching over the land as far as your eyes could see. It can run up to 35 miles an hour and can spin around faster than a horse. Like us, a pregnant mother carries her baby for 9 months and nurses it for about a year. It can smell water from miles away, and it only eats grass. Have you guessed what it is? It's the American bison, or as you know it, the buffalo. My guest today is Richard Rosen, and he is the author of the book, A Buffalo in the House, The True Story of a Man, an Animal, and the American West. Today you will hear the story of one unforgettable buffalo named Charlie, and it's all because Richard Rosen met this most unusual of house guests, a live young buffalo. Wait until you see the photos of Charlie as a baby. Major cute factor. Welcome, Richard. I am thrilled to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Susan. Happy to be here.
Richard Rosen is the author of three nonfiction books, including Psychobabble, an examination of cult psychotherapies that was inspired by the term he invented in 1975, and the recent 2007 book, A Buffalo in the House, which we will be talking about today. He is also the author of five mystery novels and co-authored the humor books Bad Cat, Bad Dog, and Bad President, two of which were New York Times bestsellers. He is currently a senior editor of ESPN Books. I have some photos from his book and website showing pictures of the baby buffalo that we'll be talking about today. So if you'd like to see them while you're listening, click that purple Look While You Listen button that you see here on TalkZone.com page. This will take you right to my photos on my website, wildaboutpets.net, so you can look while you listen. Also, the phone lines are open today. It's September 4th. And if you'd like to join our conversation and ask Richard Rosen a question, just call 888-463-6748. Again, it's September 4th. We're live. And the number to call is 888-GO-FOR-IT. Richard, what was it like meeting a buffalo close up for the first time?
Impressive. You know, you don't go looking for a story like this. It kind of drops in your lap.
Mm-hmm.
And this one did quite by accident in Santa Fe several years ago. I was at a brunch party and found myself standing next to a middle-aged woman. And I asked her what she did for a living, and she said, without skipping a beat, "I'm a chiropractor for large mammals." And I asked the next and very obvious question. I said, "Who's your most interesting client?" And she said, "A lame buffalo." And I said that this was something I had to see. And she said, "Excuse me, just 1 minute." And she went to the phone in this house where the party was taking place, made a call and said, get in the car.
Oh.
Excuse me. And we rode 5 miles outside of Santa Fe to Suki, to a big house that had a corral. I walked down to the corral and met this couple, middle-aged couple, Roger Brooks and Verl Goodnight, and stood at the corral fence while Roger whistled for what was then a 2-year-old, 1,700-pound male buffalo who came trotting up to the fence from about 40, 50 feet away. And because I happen to love animals of all sizes and don't have that much experience with wild animals, mm-hmm. I stuck my hand out, and he immediately started to lick it. Now, you have to understand that a buffalo's head is about as big as a Volkswagen. It's huge. It's not like anything you've ever seen.
Right.
You can't relate it to any animal experience you've had unless you've already met a buffalo. And he started to lick my hand with a tongue that was about a foot long and looked at me with these, you know, doe-like eyes, and I just fell in love, although he was taking the skin off my forearm with his tongue.
So is their tongue rather rough like a cat's would be?
It's a cat's tongue cubed.
Okay.
So that was the physically unforgettable part of it, was that I had a very raw red forearm for the next week. But it was well worth it just for that moment of being face-to-face with an animal who's been on the earth for almost 1 million years.
Yes, now there is a photograph. I got this from your website. It's picture number 3, and it shows you with your face near the, Charlie's nose. Was this taken on this first meeting?
That was the moment.
Uh-huh.
He's licking my face, right? I don't have the photo in front of me.
Right.
So I'm lying when I said the extent of my intimacy was that he was licking my arm. For some reason, I bent down thinking, you know, like a dog or a cat, he would lick my face very gently. But instead, he took a couple swipes of my right cheek. And I felt that for a week or two.
Well, yes, you had mentioned they have been on this planet for millions, or about 1 million years, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more. But so, all right, so you met this buffalo. How is it that you came to meet Verl and Roger and decided to actually write this book?
Well, I'm a writer, so I always have my ears open for unusual stories. And after I was through being licked and slobbered over by Charlie, I sat down and talked for a bit with Roger and Verl, and being a writer, I asked a lot of questions, and I found out that they had adopted Charlie. He had been orphaned at about a week old and would have died of exposure and starvation if he hadn't found a home. He could not be reintroduced to his herd, which had moved on to some higher pasture ground, so they had adopted him, which was fascinating in itself, also because Charlie was clearly such a, not a domesticated animal,
mm-hmm.
but a tame animal, a friendly animal, because animals have different personalities,
mm-hmm.
and he seemed very special. But the most amazing thing I learned that day was that Verl Goodnight, Roger's wife, they do not have children, she is a well-known Western painter and sculptor. And she had learned that she was descended from a man named Charles Goodnight, who was one of the most famous cattle ranchers in this country in the 19th century. He's called the father of the Texas Panhandle, major, major cattle rancher. But unlike most cattle ranchers then or now, he loved buffalo.
Mm.
He loved them, and he respected them because they're so much more resourceful than cattle.
Mm-hmm.
They've not only been here 1 million years, they've been here consistently longer than any animal that has ever been on the earth. They survived major cataclysms 10,000 years ago that wiped out every other mammal on earth except the buffalo.
I know. I found that remarkable when I read that in your book.
Yeah, they're that resourceful. So when she found out she was descended from this guy and that this man, Charles Goodnight, had actually saved the buffalo species from extinction in the 1870s, which is another story I'm sure we'll get into,
mm-hmm.
but through a combination of factors, the buffalo had almost completely been wiped out, finally, in the 1870s. and Charles Goodnight and his wife thought, gee, if we don't do something, you know, Susan and Richard in 130 years are only going to be able to see buffalo in the Museum of Natural History.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to start a herd. Now, the amazing thing about this amazing thing is that only three or four people in the entire United States had this thought at the time and took it upon themselves to try to save the buffalo. So the Goodnight couple, who also didn't have kids, they roped out a buffalo calf, a boy and a girl, and they bred them. And because of that decision and also some more serendipitous things that happened elsewhere in the Plain States, we have buffalo today. And she, Verl, was so impressed with what her ancestors had done, she decided to make a sculpture commemorating this, a sculpture of Mary Ann Goodnight bottle feeding to these two calves to start the herd and save the buffalo. And she was going to call it Back from the Brink. And she needed a model. She only works from life. She only works from life. She needed a baby buffalo. Well, Roger and Verl put out the call in the West to everybody they knew, who knew somebody who was a buffalo rancher, saying, if there's an orphan buffalo, I would like to have it, at least for a while. And so as it happened, there was an orphaned buffalo up in Idaho. Roger, who's a pilot, flew up there with Verl and rescued this then one-week-old animal and brought him back, and he started to model for Verl. Every day, a human model would dress up in period garb and bottle feed with powdered goat's milk this little buffalo while Verl made sketches. And this went on for several weeks, and the buffalo kept growing by several pounds every day. And by the end of that period, you know, they intended to get rid of Charlie because Charlie's mm-hmm. a wild animal.
Mm-hmm.
Verl and Roger have tremendous respect for wild animals and tremendous respect for their own well-being. You know, they don't fool around. So they fully intended, when the buffalo got a little bigger, to take it to a buffalo ranch. But it turned out that Charlie was such a friendly buffalo. No, he thought he was one of the cats in the household.
Yes, or dogs or people.
That they kept him much longer than they thought they would, and Roger fell completely in love, head over heels in love yes. with Charlie. They became inseparable.
Yes, and as we go through our conversation here and I refer to some of the photographs, there's just very touching and really adorable photos of the two of them together, as well as Charlie and Verl. Speaking of photos, if anyone wants to see a picture of Verl with a model, some of the, I guess, the sculpture that Verl was starting, it's photograph number 10. And we'll kind of skip around here, but we see her with Charlie kind of nuzzling close to her, and it looks like in her studio you can see some of, you know, the buffalo being modeled. And then later on in the photographs there is the finished sculpture, which are amazing because they're life size. And I didn't realize when I first read your book, and you know, you were relating that she sculpts animals, I guess I thought they were going to be miniature until I realized, oh, how fabulous, you know.
Well, she starts with a model, a small
uh-huh.
Which is the, you know, you see one of those in the photograph,
mm-hmm.
but when she casts the final sculpture, it's larger than life size.
Oh, that's amazing. And by the way, if anybody wants to see these pictures, you just click the purple Look While You Listen button, and that will take you right to my photos. Or if you're starting with my website, you know, just click that Look While You Listen button. It'll take you to our show today, and then you can see all the photographs that we're talking about. So, all right, let's talk a little bit more about the animals. Obviously, you know, I mentioned a little bit of their natural history originally, you know, in my introduction, but where would they have naturally have lived, Richard, or still do naturally live?
Well, those are two separate questions.
Okay.
As you mentioned in your introduction, they originally were plentiful in every state in the continental U.S. except for Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire. They didn't get up that far.
Okay.
But they basically owned America. As late as 1860, there were more buffalo than people. There were, by different estimates, between 40 and 60 buffalo in this country at a time in 1860 when there were only 38 million humans.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those 38 million humans in over the course of the next 30, 40 years managed to basically eradicate all of them.
What happened?
Ah.
I know we have to be a little brief here, and I kind of relate your story, and you go into such great detail, but one of the things, Richard, I loved most about your book is because of this greatly personal connection between Viral Goodnight and her relative Charles, we are hearing the most personal story, the closest kind of connection. And unless, unlike some of the history books, because, you know, we grew up, you know, as Americans, kind of, you know, hearing about this and remembering, but it was so textbooky, and you know, sometimes we disengage or we disconnect, you know, emotionally from stories like that. But your book tells it in the most personal of ways, and I find that was one of the reasons why it is so compelling.
Mm-hmm. We tend in this country, and it's part of human nature generally, just to forget the bad things that have been done.
Yes, right.
Forget history. And you know, Susan, you and I grew up in the same town, actually, which is kind of interesting.
Yes.
But have never met before. Because I think it was in a seventh grade social studies book at Edgewood Junior High that I probably saw the usual pictures or lithographs of people hunting buffalo from trains
mm-hmm.
in the 70s. And when I met Charlie, that was all I knew about the buffalo.
Oh, that's right, because I'd wanted to ask, had you known a lot about buffaloes before you wrote the book?
Just what most Americans know, which is,
right.
Gee, it's a beautiful animal, and there used to be a lot, but there aren't many now, and didn't we kill all of them, and isn't it on a nickel? And
right, know, exactly.
Just an assortment of facts without understanding the true tragedy of the species.
Yes.
What happened to them in the 19th century?
Yes, and then of course I think a lot of people say, "Oh yeah, you know, there used to be a lot, then they almost, you know, were wiped out, but then they were saved and now it's okay," right?
Yeah.
And later on we'll talk about that all is not quite so all right still with the state of buffaloes, but that will be later in our story. But I want to call attention to the cover of your book, which is photograph number 2, and besides, you know, a great picture of Roger Brooks and Charlie, as, you know, a much more grown buffalo. On the top, you have this fabulous illustration that is the closest thing that, you know, I could find of probably what it looked like to show all the millions of buffalo. So again, click the purple Look While You Listen button. That will take you to the photographs if you want to see that. Or of course, you know, when you order Richard's book, and you can find that by going to my website. We'll talk about that later. You can see this illustration of what it must have looked like when there were millions. Anyway, so briefly, Richard, let's hit on just kind of how it was that this, you know, creature somehow got caught in the middle over and over again between human affairs.
Yes, why it became the most demonized and cursed species ever. So there are a number of reasons, and I'll try to make it really short. I'll run it down. But the buffalo got hit from all directions by different forces, human and historical forces. The first was that when the horse was introduced to Indian cultures in the 1600s, suddenly there was an animal fast enough to hunt buffalo. So that was bad for the buffalo. It was great for the Indians because their culture was based almost entirely on the buffalo. They
sure.
used buffalo for, you know, 80 or 90 different things, you know, food, shelter, fuel, tools, et cetera, weapons. Then, of course, what happened is that when the Europeans, when we whites started to settle the West, we basically had a policy, and it was explicit, of exterminating the Indians. And we understood, and this, there's no secret about this, that the way to undermine the Indian culture and to eliminate them was to eliminate the buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Then they wouldn't be able to survive. So that was another motive for destroying the buffalo, and the federal government took full advantage of that. You know, one of the famous lines is, every buffalo gone is an Indian gone,
mm-hmm.
and we took that very, very seriously.
Yeah.
So there was a genocide against the American Indian that involved a genocide, or a suicide, I guess we'd say, of the buffalo. Okay, this was helped along by another factor, which was the invention of the Sharps rifle.
Mm.
First rifle that could shoot really long distances. So now you didn't need the horse to kill the buffalo. You just needed men and Sharps rifles. Indians used them too. The Indians had a name for the Sharps rifle. It was shoots today and kills tomorrow.
Mm.
They were so impressed by its, you know, effectiveness from, you know, up to a mile. Then there was also a new tanning process that was developed in Europe and America that suddenly made buffalo hides, which had been very difficult to tan. They were very soft. Suddenly made buffalo hides incredibly marketable, and the price soared. Then the last factor against the buffalo was the Transcontinental Railroad in the 1860s, because you had to, first of all, feed all the people working on the tens of thousands of people working on the railroad. Then the railroad itself became a form of cheap transportation to get their hides and tongues and their furs back to the east. And also the trains provided easy access for hunters. So all these people from the east looking to make a living, because you could make more money killing buffalo than doing almost anything else for a period of time in post-Civil War America. And now they could get out west very quickly on the train. So all these things worked against the buffalo, and the, you know, numbers dwindled and dwindled and dwindled until in the 1870s, when Charles Goodnight looked at his wife Mary Ann and said, geez, honey, maybe we ought to start a herd of buffalo. There were only a few thousand left.
Ah, well, and that connection about, you know, the good nights again will be the perfect lead-in for us to take the story much closer to home when we return after a break and we hear about modern-day Verrill Goodnight and Roger Brooks adopting Charlie, a baby buffalo. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.